Stages of labor, hormones of birth, and timing contractions are not the most important or effective ways to learn about physiologic birth. And chances are, you've learned some of that, and you still have questions about what to expect from birth. And these questions linger because the sources that are teaching childbirth preparation are only offering facts about labor and birth created to enable the medical system to justify the use of interventions to speed up labor, despite the injuries experienced by mothers and the disruptions to the mother-baby bonding. Before birth became a medical procedure that needed these guidelines and metrics, women were shown physiologic birth instead of charts and graphs and tables. Today, we have the benefit of merging traditional physiologic birth knowledge with what is useful from research and evidence. And this has been the key to helping my students and clients avoid things like tears and traumatic birth injuries and go on to have fulfilling natural births. If natural birth is calling you, merging traditional physiologic birth with learning modern knowledge may be the answer to your lingering questions. And you can begin the journey of seeing physiologic birth with a free class that will introduce you to the 3 P's of physiologic birth that help my students and clients avoid tearing in only 15 minutes. So you will know why you can trust your body to give birth without injury. After watching this 15-minute video, you will know what physiologic birth really is and why learning the stages of labor, lists of hormones, and cervical dilation rates is just not enough, the most common points in labor where tissue damage tends to occur, and how to use the 3 P's of physiology to prevent the causes of tears or episiotomies. And you will learn the difference between being 10 centimeters and being ready to push. After seeing the physiology in this way, one of my students, Sarah, said, "Simply mind-blowing. Thank you so much for sharing this information. I want to share this with all of the birth professionals that I have ever met, as it is so clear to me now how we have all been missing the big picture." And Cassie said, "I took 4 courses, and yours is the one I walked away with feeling the most empowered. Very specifically, the physiologic birth part where you show the slides of where baby is. Having known what baby does in that dance with the pictures just let me trust the process, so I never felt worried." So if you'd like to learn more about what Sarah and Cassie are talking about, you can get started with this very special and unique physiologic birth training for free at naturalbirthcompass.com/free class. I hope to see you there. Today is part 2 of our series of episodes on herbs for pregnancy. And in this second part, I want to cover some herbs that can be brought into the second and third trimesters of pregnancy for various discomforts. We'll explore herbs for supporting healthy blood pressure, blood sugar balance, and herbs for preparing for birth itself. Now, since we're getting into using herbs beyond nutritive tonics, I just want to briefly touch on safety again, in that none of these herbs are recommended to be a standalone approach. In some cases, when these types of conditions arise in pregnancy, they may be an indicator of an underlying problem that may not be anywhere near a clinical stage at this point, but they can be revealed in pregnancy nonetheless. Whether that's something like poor blood vessel tone, glucose intolerance, poor hormone metabolism, blood pressure instability, and that just names a few of them. Because pregnancy is increasing the stress on your body, underlying health conditions that you may not have been aware of may become aggravated during pregnancy, and it may even be the first time that you're ever made aware that something isn't quite right. This means that pregnancy can also be a great time to learn how to tune into your body, really noticing and observing what's happening. You can get a lot of insight into how to support your specific needs during and after your pregnancy just by learning how to pay very close attention. Also, it's important to know that not all herbs work for all people for the same conditions. And this is because the root of the problem is not the same for you as it was for your friend or your coworker who may have had the same type of symptom or complaint. So if you're not sure how to go about selecting the correct herb or herb formulas to use for yourself, find an experienced herbalist to help you understand how to properly incorporate herbs. Also note that nothing that you'll hear in this podcast has been approved or evaluated by the FDA and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or condition and should only be used under the supervision of your medical care provider. So Herbs for Your Pregnancy Part 2 is what we're talking about today on the Journey to Birth podcast. Imagine transforming the anxiety, the worry, and uncertainty you have about your birth right now into the confidence and knowledge that will end everyone's questions about your natural birth and even have them asking you how you did it. Are you ready to stop imagining your wonderful birth and start preparing to experience it? Then you're in the right place. I'm Tristan, the creator of the Natural Birth Compass online childbirth education program, and I'm coming to your ears with perspectives of birth from across time and cultures to help you become more informed and confident in your birth. So grab your mug, fill it with your favorite tea, and let's begin the journey to birth. So for this second part of our discussion on herbs, I just want to start with another little mini herb lesson. This one's about the flavor and temperature of herbs, because this concept applies to the herbs that we're going to be discussing today. Now, this concept of flavors and temperatures, it comes more from the ancient traditions of herbal medicine, like Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine, and is also used in many of the eclectic styles of herbalism today. So in reference to flavor of herbs, and we're going to talk about five different flavors, we have herbs that are pungent and spicy, like cinnamon, ginger, or black pepper. We have herbs that are bitter, like the bitter of dandelion, or think of that really strong hoppy flavor in a strongly hopped beer like an IPA. Then we have sweet herbs like fruits and licorice. We have salty herbs, which you can think of as mineral-rich herbs, and plants like nettle that we talked about in the last herbal episode with the nutritive herbs. And sour and astringent herbs like many of the berries and citrus fruits. Then we can also add the category of temperatures. And again, here we have five, and those are hot, warm, cold, cool, and neutral. Now, herbs that are pungent and spicy, those herbs tend to get fluids and blood circulation moving faster. So we might use these herbs to increase the flow of fluids or to increase the response of tissues or of circulation overall. Bitter herbs tend to be cooling and relaxing. If you think about the time that you're mostly eating bitter herbs, it's going to be in your fresh salads. And we tend to crave fresh salads more in the summer than we do in the winter because these plant foods have some natural cooling effects on our body. Now, sweet herbs often help with building up our energy and they're very nourishing, while salty herbs also build us up, but they tend more towards building up our physical strength by providing lots of minerals. And sour herbs are often used to help restrain and consolidate. So if too much fluid is leaving the body through sweat or too much swelling, we might think of something like sour herbs. Now, these classifications are important because it helps us to give you the right herb for your condition. Remember, I said not all herbs work for every person. And that's because you need to have the right herb combination based on these different flavors and temperatures. So for example, two people can have headaches, but one person may need warm and sour astringent herbs for their headaches, while the other person may need cold and bitter herbs for theirs. The best combination for you is going to depend on the cause of your complaint, as well as the internal state of your body's systems, whether it's something like a headache, constipation, a rash, or trying to get labor started. With the right combination of flavors and temperatures, we can relax or tighten tissues. We can slow or speed up your body's responses to environmental factors or to internal signals. We can increase or decrease fluid movement. We can adjust fluid balance within different body tissues, and so on and so on. The key to really making herbs work for you is to match the qualities of the herb with your constitutional type, with the state of the condition you're trying to work with, and also always keeping in mind the external factors that may be aggravating the condition. So things like stress, diet, sleep, even weather, all of these can play a role in the expression of your symptoms. So as we talk about herbs for some of the conditions that I'll bring in today, keep in mind the flavor of these herbs and the temperature of these herbs and how those might relate to the different ways that you're feeling. Remember, this podcast episode is far from a course in herbalism, which takes months, if not years, to even begin to understand how to effectively use herbs. But I do think that we all need to have some basic skills to be able to help ourselves and our families, or even to ensure that your herbalist has the adequate training to help you so you know what questions to be asking and you can have a conversation with them about what herbs are going to be most supportive. So I hope these little mini lessons are useful for you and empowering you to feel a little more comfortable with nature's plant medicine. But as I've said before, if this is not something that you're familiar with, or if you're struggling with more severe conditions, please make sure that you're seeking the help of a qualified herbalist. And now you'll also be able to ask them about the flavor and temperature of your formulas or the herbs that they're recommending so you can understand if they're going to make sense for you. So that brings us to the end of our mini lesson on flavor and temperatures. So now I want to jump into herbs for our specific conditions. So the first one that I want to talk about today is blood sugar balance. Now, I'm intentionally starting with this topic because it's a difficult area of pregnancy to traverse. So what do I mean when I talk about blood sugar balance? Well, for most women, this isn't going to come up until you get tested for gestational diabetes in later pregnancy. Now, I'm not going to talk about gestational diabetes specifically or the testing for it because that's a whole other show. So to stay on topic, all I'm going to talk about specifically is that having healthy blood sugar levels and insulin responses is a much bigger issue than simply testing for gestational diabetes in the third trimester and doing just the glucose challenge test or whatever's being offered by your care provider. I also just want to be clear that if you have pre-existing diabetes, gestational diabetes, or insulin resistance, these herbs are not a replacement for metformin or insulin or any kind of medication that you may be on. So if that's you, you do need to be sure that you're working with your care provider or a specialist to incorporate these herbal approaches with your medications so that they can help you monitor your shifting blood sugar levels. You may be able to bring some of these herbs in and lower the amount of medication that you're taking, but you do need to do that carefully and responsibly. So glucose and blood sugar, these are important for every day of our lives, whether we're pregnant or not pregnant, breastfeeding or not breastfeeding. And we all need sugar to live, but in moderate doses. You know, most of us are eating more sugar in 1 year than our ancestors ate in their entire lifetime. It's not normal for your body to be exposed to the level of sugar that we are eating today. So I do want you to be thinking about that throughout your pregnancy and beyond, not just when you're getting ready to go for your glucose challenge test. So of course, diet is the first component when we talk about blood sugar, which again is a topic for another day. But if you want to read more about it now, I would encourage you to get a couple of books by Lily Nichols. The first one is Real Food for Gestational Diabetes, which is a great book for everyone, not just those who've been given a diagnosis of gestational diabetes. You can also check out her second book, Real Food for Pregnancy, which is a more general, comprehensive guide to how to eat whole food, real food for pregnancy, for beyond pregnancy, for feeding your family. Both of those are really excellent books. And I actually have a podcast episode of an interview I did with Lily that should be coming out here shortly as well. So that's where I'm going to end the diet part of this discussion for now in this episode. And now I'm going to move into how you can naturally support your blood sugar response with herbs. So the foundational, most basic way to try to prevent blood sugar issues in pregnancy as well as the rest of your life is simply through incorporating the nourishing infusions that I talked about in part one of the herbal series that came out a couple weeks ago. That was episode number 17. This is herbs like nettle, alfalfa, oat straw, even dandelion leaves, and also one we mentioned last time was goji berries. Remember that I told you in that episode that these herbs are nourishing because they're mineral rich. And these minerals like calcium, magnesium, chromium, zinc, these minerals are critical for the release and sensitivity of the insulin that binds to glucose and helps to take it from your blood into your cells, which is what lowers your blood sugar. In pregnancy, this becomes especially tricky because so many things are in a state of flux all the time in your body in regard to your hormones, your fluid balance, metabolism, even your blood volume. All of those shifts impact your need for glucose and it impacts your ability to manage that glucose. So we have the nourishing herbs to provide those important minerals that work together to support your insulin response to the glucose in your system. Now, an important thing to know is that these nourishing herbs, they don't work like an insulin injection. So if you take insulin, essentially it binds to your glucose and it carries it into the cells to be utilized or stored for later. So what that means is that these herbs, they won't crash your blood sugar levels. They just feed your body the nutrients that it needs in order to support a healthy and appropriate immune response. Now, if you feel like you need more blood sugar support, if you're finding that you have blood sugar crashes or you have trouble staying asleep at night, which sometimes can be a result of blood sugar imbalances, it's not the only cause, but it is a very common contributor, I have a couple more herbs for you to consider adding into your nourishing infusion. So the first one of these herbs is cinnamon bark. Now, cinnamon bark is a warming and pungent herb, and as things get warmer, they speed up. So if you tend to run warm already, or you're always on high speed and you probably need to be slowing down, then cinnamon bark might not be the right herb for you, in which case the next herb that I'll talk about for blood sugar may be a better fit. But for cinnamon bark, and this can just even be the cinnamon that you get at the store, and also note that I'm specifying bark here because this is a different herb than the cinnamon twigs that are used primarily in like a Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine. And the cinnamon twig has to be used very carefully in pregnancy. But you won't find that one at your local grocery store, so you don't have to worry about it there. But if you're ordering herbs directly from an herbal supplier, just make sure that you're getting cinnamon bark and not cinnamon twig. Now, you can use your cinnamon bark as a tea by just simmering it on your stovetop for about 15 minutes if you have cinnamon sticks, or you can even just use cinnamon powder in your other foods. Now, the next herb that I want to talk about for blood sugar balance is chia seeds. Now, these are more of a neutral and sweet herb, so it's more appropriate for those who tend to run warm, especially if you feel like you also get dry symptoms easily. Dry skin, dry mouth, dry hair, dry type of constipation. This is a great herb for that as well as to help stabilize blood sugar. So when you use chia seeds, you want to take them soaked. And there's a couple of really easy ways to do that. One is to add a few tablespoons of chia seeds into coconut milk or coconut cream and let it sit in the fridge overnight to thicken up into a coconut chia seed pudding. You can also add a few tablespoons of chia seeds into an herbal tea like a raspberry or a lemon tea and let that sit overnight. As the chia seeds soak, they end up thickening your tea, which you actually might see bottled juices like this in the health food section of your grocery store, but you can actually make these really easily and cheaply at home. And also then you have control over the sugar amount. If you just use an herbal tea, you're not adding any sugar. Whereas the juices that you buy at the store, they may, if it's made with fruit juice, is going to have fruit sugar in it, or they may add additional sugar to increase the flavoring a little bit. And the whole point of what we're talking about is trying to help balance blood sugar and not add more sugar into the diet. So now I want to move into talking about herbs for another common pregnancy condition, and that is high blood pressure or hypertension, and what hopefully doesn't become preeclampsia because you've already nipped it in the bud. So this is another condition that can be very serious in pregnancy, so please don't try to simply use herbs in place of seeing your care provider. That's not the answer for this problem. The answer is to incorporate the herbs safely and in conjunction with care from your provider. Now, if you don't find your provider is interested in helping to support your approach, in many cases, you still have time to change your provider up to the end of your pregnancy. Or if you're in a situation where that's not going to be an option for you, look for an additional care provider who maybe won't be attending your birth, but can help you with the management of your blood pressure throughout your pregnancy safely. So some of the herbs that I like to use for high blood pressure are passionflower, skullcap, hops, and lindenflower. Now you can use any of these herbs in any combination with just the simple infusion method that I introduced in part one of this herbal series. Take one part of each herb and add them to your heatproof container. Cover them with double the amount of just boiled water and let it steep for 4 or more hours, and then just strain and drink at room temperature. Now, these are all bitter, slightly cooling herbs that work to basically relax the sympathetic nervous system response. So they deal with stress, whether that stress is coming from a mental or emotional stress, or it's a physical stress from pregnancy itself, or a combination of both, which is usually the case. By helping to return the sympathetic, or what we call the fight or flight response, toward a better balance with the parasympathetic or rest and digest state, this will help lessen the state of tension on your blood vessels and through that mechanism, lower your blood pressure. Again, if you're struggling with high blood pressure or hypertension that you're having a hard time getting under control, make sure you're also being monitored by your healthcare provider and not only trying herbs, as it can be an early sign of preeclampsia, which is a very serious condition in pregnancy for you and your baby. So now I want to talk about herbs for inducing labor, which is one of the things I get asked about the most. If you've been listening to this podcast, you might remember that I devoted an entire episode to waiting for labor to get started, strategies in pregnancy to encourage timely labor, the need for inductions, and so on. It was episode 13 called Waiting for Baby. So to build on those suggestions, which are always the first place to start, so do go listen to that episode if you haven't already, so you can try to avoid having to use induction techniques in the first place. But to build on those suggestions, we'll talk about a few commonly mentioned herbal labor preparation techniques that you've probably heard before or read about before, but you're maybe not really sure if, how, or why they work. So I'm going to start with dates, which are commonly recommended for cervical dilation. Dates are sweet and warm. They're nutritionally dense with high levels of potassium, magnesium, selenium, copper, and also moderate levels of magnesium, calcium, iron. Now, the sweet date fruit may help with cervical dilation through their role as a nourishing tonic, but not everyone likes dates because they are pretty sweet. So if you've been following the guidelines of the Waiting for Baby episode, that was episode 13, and drinking your nourishing infusion from part one of this herbal series, you probably won't need to eat dates because you already have those nourishing nutrients through other methods. If you do want to use dates to try to promote cervical dilation, from the little bit of research we have, it looks like it takes up to 6 to 7 dates per day, which you can eat straight, you can soak them overnight, or you can mix them into things like salads or Greek yogurt if you want to cut that sweetness factor down a bit. So next up is castor oil. Now the castor bean that the oil is pressed from is bitter and cooling. Castor oil is only considered safe in pregnancy near the end of pregnancy. So dates you can eat all throughout your pregnancy. They're fine to eat if you like them. Castor oil, you only want to use them toward the end of your pregnancy because it has an uncomfortable and strong laxative effect that you don't want to be experiencing at any other point in time in pregnancy. And there's a slight risk of potentially causing a miscarriage. Now, there's some research to show that castor oil may help to improve the sensitivity of your oxytocin receptors to the hormone oxytocin, which is one of the hormones of labor. But the evidence for the effectiveness of this is not strong, especially considering the level of side effects of being that strong and uncomfortable laxative. Though castor oil is not an induction method that I recommend for my clients or my students because of how uncomfortable it is for most people, if you are considering it, it's more likely to work and more recommended for those who tend to have a history showing a pattern of poor breakdown of hormones in general. So if you had difficult periods before you were pregnant, lots of PMS, you had acne before you were pregnant, breast pain during ovulation or with your periods or other signs like that, those can tend to indicate poor hormone metabolism. So you may be more of a candidate to have a good response from something like castor oil. If you already tend toward being cold natured, you feel cold a lot of the times, or if you have a tendency toward loose stool already, then castor oil is probably not going to be a good choice for you. So the last herb in the category of labor induction is evening primrose oil, which is usually sought out again for cervical dilation. Now, evening primrose oil is sweet and neutral. It's a rich source of omega-6 and omega-9 fatty acids. In many cases, evening primrose oil is safe to use, but like most other herbs, it does have mixed results as far as labor induction. I think in this case, the mixed results happen because for some people, taking evening primrose oil or any kind of omega-6 supplement can actually aggravate an already out of balance omega ratio. Now, most people get plenty of, in fact, probably too many omega-6 fatty acids in their diet while being deficient in omega-3 fatty acids, which are found more in animal products like fish, eggs, grass-fed butter, grass-fed meats, and a few non-animal sources like walnuts, flax, and chia seeds, but they're just not as prevalent in most people's diets today. Now, all fatty acids, especially omega-3s, which when we say omega-3s, we're talking about primarily the DHA and EPA, now these are extremely important to the integrity of your amniotic sac. Plus, we also know that babies need a lot of DHA, especially at the end of the third trimester, that's probably important for brain development, and that may have some role to play in initiating labor. So generally, what I find is that rather than evening primrose oil, I'm often recommending a good quality fish oil or more fish in the diet instead of evening primrose oil. So let's do a quick summary of what we've covered in this episode. So first, we talked about the flavors and the temperature of herbs in our little mini herbal lesson. We covered the pungent, bitter, salty, sweet, and sour flavors of herbs. And then we covered the temperatures of hot, warm, cold, cool, and neutral. Then we looked at herbs to support a healthy blood sugar balance. So we had cinnamon bark and chia seed, depending on your need for warm and pungent or neutral and sweet herbs. Then we discussed herbs for high blood pressure or hypertension. Now, this was an infusion of the cold and bitter relaxing herbs of skullcap, passionflower, hops, and lindenflower, or any combination of those that you can get. And finally, we talked about herbs for inducing labor, the pros and cons, and who these might work for or not work for, including dates, castor oil, and evening primrose oil. And again, if this is an area that you want to explore deeper, I would encourage you to go listen to the Waiting for Baby episode to learn other lifestyle and dietary techniques to help ensure that you have a timely labor, so you're not stuck at this point of trying to find ways to induce labor if at all possible. Now, this is really only a tiny glimpse into herbs for pregnancy. And if this is something that you're interested in learning more about to support your pregnancy journey, I would love to have you join us in the Natural Birth Compass program, our online childbirth course. In that course, if you're in our full program, you also get access to our live birth coaching calls, where we can talk more in depth about herbal medicine for pregnancy or birth preparation in a private and individualized space, so you can get the help that you need to use herbs in your pregnancy safely. Visit the course page at naturalbirthcompass.com/course to get the full details about that program, or you're always welcome to contact me at info@naturalbirthcompass.com if you have any questions. Until next time, wishing you a wonderful journey to birth. Thank you for listening and being open to new perspectives as we spent this time together. As always, let me know how I can support your journey. If you have topics you want to hear about, guests you'd like to hear from, questions or comments to share, let me know. This podcast is always transforming, and you can help shape it into something that helps thousands of families have the best pregnancy, birth, and transition into parenthood possible by leaving a comment or a review or sharing this podcast with others in your life who will benefit from our discussions. Find me on the socials at Natural Birth Compass or email me at info@naturalbirthcompass.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss out on our next episode. Wishing you a wonderful journey to birth.